When it comes to deaths from cancer, colorectal cancer is number 2 in the United States. This means that over 50,000 people will die this year. The good news is the death rate is falling. Colorectal cancer is a type of cancer for which screening is possible, enabling it to be detected early. In addition, treatment has improved, resulting in 1 million survivors of this cancer in the United States alone. But how do we safeguard ourselves from getting it? Can we really reduce our risk? What type of screening is best? Stay tuned and we'll answer all those questions and more. Also on today's show, join us in the kitchen for a wonderful recipe, and Sean will join us for some invigorating exercise. Go Healthy for Good starts right now. Welcome to Go Healthy for Good. I'm Dr. Nerida and I'm glad you've joined me today. Go Healthy for Good is live every Monday to Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Go Healthy Live. If you want to watch a previous episode or find all our recipes, then go to our website, hopetv.org/gohealthy. Global statistics show the lowest rates of colorectal cancer are in Asia and Africa. And the highest rates? Well, they're in Europe, North America, and Australasia. This suggests there is something that we each can do to reduce the incidence of this disease. Before we start this conversation, though, take a look at this video that will help us put this problem into perspective. Please watch.
My name is Kavita Jagasia, and I was diagnosed with colorectal cancer in July of 2008. I did notice some redness in my stool, and I would have never, ever thought that this was relating to cancer. You know, the way I was looking at it was maybe it's my diet, maybe it's the stress, you know, because as I said, cancer was the last thing on my mind. Of course, when, when the surgeon came to give us the news, he had good news and bad news. And my husband asked to share the bad news first, and the bad news was that it was colon cancer. And the good news was that it was stage 2, so it was operable. You know, until then I didn't know what the outcome was going to be, whether I was going to go for chemo, whether I was going to go for radiation. I knew I had cancer, you know, and it was only after I went, when we completed the biopsy and all of that. But until all of that, until I found out that I didn't have to go for chemo, but that time period was hell because I didn't know how long I would be off work, how my health would be impacted. I have a young family, I have a young son, and we were just not prepared. It came as a bombshell. But if I can say the good thing that came out of this, because it was a shock to me and to everyone else, that it propelled my friends and my family to also go for the screenings that was recommended by their own doctors. There is a simple home test. I was not aware of it at the time I was diagnosed. Had I known about it, I would have done it. And who knows, the outcome may have been totally different. The most important message that I would like to share with everyone is just do the test. I know it sounds yucky. It's a simple test, but do it because it can save lives. So the last 2 years have been a learning experience. I've learned to deal with it, and I've made some changes as well in my thinking and in my lifestyle. And besides the regular, visits to the doctor, which, will continue, but today I'm healthy, I'm back to work, and living a good life.
Joining me today is Dr. Joseph Genovese, a board-certified internal medicine physician and a member of the American Gastroenterological Society. He's a gastroenterologist at Capital Digestive Care here in Maryland. Welcome, Dr. Genovese.
Certainly welcome.
Dr. Genovese, what happens to our food after we've swallowed and it's gone to the stomach?
Well, basically from the stomach it passes on into the small intestine. That's where most of our nutrients are absorbed. Once the food has been digested and absorbed, then the remainder of it goes to the colon. And the colon is primarily where the stool is formed. It also allows a lot of water to be recovered as well as other salts to be recovered.
Great. And now the colon, or the large intestine, is prone to polyps. What are they? Why do we get them?
Well, a polyp is basically a small growth in the lining of the colon. It's an overgrowth of normal tissue, which can form into a bump or sometimes even a larger lesion that looks like a grape on a stalk.
Now, gastroenterologists are very interested in polyps. Why do you guys like polyps so much?
Well, polyps basically by themselves are not a problem, but if they're allowed to stay in, some of them can turn into cancer. And most colon cancers do start as a polyp, so the trick is to find polyps when they're small and remove them. This prevents colon cancer.
How long does it take from the appearance of a polyp to a cancer developing? Does anyone know?
They have some guesses. We think it's somewhere between 7 and 15 years. So you have quite a long time to be able to detect polyps and remove them before they cause other problems.
Hmm. And do all colon cancers develop from a polyp, or is that...
Most of them do. There are some that are so-called flat polyps, which may develop differently, different kinds of cancers. But the majority of cancers do start as a polyp.
Hmm. Now, the prevalence of colon cancer has been slowly decreasing in the United States, but we almost lead the world. There are a few countries that pip us to that post, but why is it that we get a lot more than the rest of the world?
It seems a combination of things. A lot of it has to do with diet and lifestyle.
So what are the things that put us at risk?
Well, I think the primary thing it does is processed foods, red meat, fat. These things in our diet seem to predispose to it. It also seems like a sedentary lifestyle may predispose, and certain vitamin deficiencies can predispose as well.
Now, is there anything to do with our age, our ethnicity? What about those kind? Are we running in the family? Any of those factors?
These are also factors. We know that polyps become more common as people get older in general. We also know that colon cancers can run in families, and families with colon cancer need to be screened more carefully. In addition, in this country, African Americans may be at slightly increased risk over the general population in this country, and therefore are screened earlier.
Hmm. Now, when you say run in families or a family member, how close does that family member need to be to impact your health? Does it just need to be like a grandparent, an aunt, an uncle, or does it need to be closer than that?
Generally, it's going to be a first-degree relative, that is, a child, a sibling, or a parent. Other relatives, again, except in certain families where it's very, very prevalent and you can draw a family tree, it's less important. If you have a grandmother, say, for instance, that may have had a colon cancer, that probably isn't enough to say that it's genetic. But someone in your immediate family, I think you have to think about a genetic cause.
Okay, now age group you mentioned. When do we hit the age that it starts to become something that we need to think about? Or what are the rates as we get older?
Generally, age 50 is where we start thinking about colon cancer screening, though again, as I said, for African Americans, the recommendation is age 45, a little sooner.
And if there's someone in the family, would you go to the 45 or would you go even younger?
You could even go younger. Most folks are recommending going to age 40 or 5 years younger than the youngest affected member. So in other words, if you have someone in the family who's been very young when they're diagnosed, say at 35, you may want to start screening another family members around age 30.
And because it takes about 7 to 15 years for the polyp to turn cancerous, that gives you that window, I guess, and
that's exactly right.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense. Now, let's talk a little bit about the modifiable risk factors that you mentioned earlier, the diet, lifestyle. Tell us, how can we modify our risk factors?
I think primarily increasing the amount of fiber in the diet is the sort of the number one thing I think about. Reducing your red meat, reducing your fat intake, those things are important. Making sure you're getting enough physical activity, enough exercise, making sure the bowels are regular. In other words, a lot of that has to do with fluid intake. And
why is the relationship between fluid and bowel regularity?
basically because the fluid itself helps change the consistency of the stool, so it's easier for the body to eliminate. So that's why fluid is very important.
And the, you mentioned earlier that the colon is a place where water can be absorbed. So if we're dehydrated, that might be one of the first places that water is kind of craved by the body, and it can access it easily. Would that be right?
Yes, that's true.
Okay. Now, how much fluid should we have?
Well, you know, again, that's people are talking about 8 to 10 glasses of liquid per day. Again, that can include all things. It doesn't have to be water in addition to everything else, because that can be quite a lot to take in unless you include other beverages.
Well, thank you. Coming up next, we'll show you a healthy dish. Don't miss it, but first, let's take a look at some doctor's orders.
Oh, I love the warm embrace of that sunshine. It's so comforting on my face.
Yeah, but you know, it's more than just comforting. Sunshine converts cholesterol to vitamin D in our skin. And vitamin D is important in preventing a number of serious illnesses like cancer and diabetes. In fact, if you have enough vitamin D, then you're 40% less likely to have diabetes.
Mm-hmm. And vitamin D also boosts our calcium absorption into our system, therefore strengthening our bones so we can resist osteoporosis, bone disease, and fractures as well.
That's true. And dark-skinned people like me, though, are more likely to be vitamin D deficient than fair-skinned people like yourself.
Is that right? So do people like yourself need more sunshine?
Yep, as much as 5 times more.
Well, aren't you afraid of burning if you get that much?
Well, I'm more concerned that people don't get enough sunshine than getting too much. And besides, us darkies, we don't burn as quickly as you whiteies. But yeah, you shouldn't burn.
Well, I've also heard that vitamin D boosts our immunity.
That's right. You're absolutely right. Our T cells, which are the first line of defense for our immune system, absolutely need vitamin D to function.
And so if we want to resist colds and flus and other diseases, we need to get plenty of sunshine?
Yep, that's right. Doctor's orders.
Well, then I think it's my duty to sit back, relax, and absorb this beautiful sunshine.
Oh, I agree.
Thanks, Doc.
Death is the only inescapable, unavoidable, sure thing. We are sentenced to die the day we're born.
Death is a debt we all must pay.
Some people are so afraid to die that they never begin to live.
Every man must do 2 things alone. He must do his own believing and his own dying.
Death is not a period, but a comma in the story of life.
He will wipe every tear from their eyes. There will be no more death or mourning or crying or pain, for the old order of things has passed away.
Welcome back. Phil, how are you today?
I'm doing terrific.
Great.
I'm excited about our recipe today.
Yeah, do you like kale?
I love it, in fact.
Really?
My parents always got on me about eating more greens.
Yep.
And I hated it as a kid.
Yep.
But now that I've gotten much older, I really enjoy them.
Same with me. Oh, I used to, that poor things. They had terrible fights with me when I was little over eating my greens, but now it's easy. I'm going to, before we actually get the ingredients, I'm actually going to put a little oil into the pan just to save it. But why don't you read the ingredients for us? Because this is a really simple recipe, but it's great.
Excellent. And this is called curly kale?
Ah, curly kale, yeah.
All right, well, what you'll need is 1 tablespoon of oil, a medium onion chopped, a red bell pepper chopped, and then 6 to 8 ounces of kale.
All right, now, actually, I just discovered this the other day, so I just made it up. I just looked at what I had and I just thought, you know, a dark green vegetable like kale is going to look great with a bright red bell pepper. And I don't like to use much oil in my cooking, so I actually mix oil and water. I make sure it's before the pot gets too hot, otherwise it spits.
Exactly.
And so I mix them together and then I just pop my onions in.
That's a pretty good idea. I've never thought of mixing water. I always just kind of assume that oil's the only way to go.
Right. It actually really cuts down how much oil you go through. And it probably takes a little bit of getting used to it. But I don't miss the oil at all. I use hardly any. I saute onions often just in water alone. But so it's a good transition to aim for.
That sounds good.
So we'll pretend that those onions are nice and done. We want to see them go transparent.
Okay.
With the heat. And then we want to put in the sweet bell pepper. And I cut it nice and chunky.
So that you can really taste it and bite down and enjoy it.
Yeah. Because I think kale tastes better with something sweet. You know, some people make kale salad and they put cranberries in or something like that.
I think that sounds great. I find the kale's a little bit bitter. And so I like this idea of adding something sweet.
Yeah.
And am I correct that a pepper has a lot of vitamin C?
It does. It's one of the highest foods for vitamin C.
So we're getting a lot of vitamin C in this.
We're getting a lot of vitamin C. And then with the kale, it actually has a lot of protein.
Oh, really? Normally, I think of meats and tofu and things like that.
I know. But kale, it has, not that vegetables have a lot of calories, but if you actually divide its calories up, more of the calories come from protein than come from anything else.
Really? Now, how did they never teach us that?
Best kept secret, probably because kids don't like their kale and they just turn their noses up and block their ears at the thought of anything being good come out of kale. Now, I also heard that kale tastes more bitter in the summertime than in the winter. And I think a lot of the brassicas, when they get a frost to them, they actually become a lot milder in taste.
Oh, okay. Well, that's really interesting.
All right, I'm going to see how much kale I can fit in this pot.
Well, it'll cook down a little bit, or are we not cooking it that much?
Well, no, I think we should cook it. You know, one thing about your green leafy veg, you're going to get a lot of calcium out of there, and folate and vitamin K and different things. So, and iron is another big thing. If you cook your greens well, you actually make the iron more bioavailable, we call it. So it's easier to absorb. Easier for the body to actually get its hands on. So, cooked green leafy veggies every day. I mean, you can miss the odd day, but just make it a habit is really going to improve.
Now, that cooked thing isn't for every vegetable, though.
No.
It's really just for the green leafy vegetables.
It's for your dark green leafies. So, for example, your Swiss chard, spinach. I mean, you can eat raw spinach, it's not going to do harm, but you're going to get more out of it if you've cooked it, and you're going to eat a lot more. You know, if you sat down and tried to eat that whole bowl full of kale, you're not going to get far, but when you cook it down like this, easy.
That's a very good point. But it's interesting, I've always kind of grown up that the less cooked a vegetable is, the better it is for you.
True.
And this is completely different from what I've heard.
Right.
I've learned something new. I appreciate it.
And the vitamin C that's in that red bell pepper, yeah, some of that is going to be destroyed by the heat. So you want to eat some raw. Look at how much that's gone down.
Oh, and it's getting bright green, and it is looking very good.
Isn't it?
but it's looking very edible.
I'm stirring it a lot because I've got it on a high heat to try and get it, get those onions cooked and get everything cooked down here. I'm going to add that.
You know, I mentioned it before, but you're doing exactly what I love about cooking. You're getting different colors. They're bright green. They're looking very appetizing. This is a meal. This is something I'm really looking forward to trying.
Great. Do you know I forgot to add salt because I never salt my food, but if you're game, I'm always game. Unsalted food. It does make it taste a little better though. But you know, if you can only really seriously good for your health, eat half a teaspoon a day, you just want to choose wisely where you put your salt.
Mm-hmm.
There, I think we're done.
It looks delicious. And I'm the same with you. When it comes to salt, I rarely use it.
Oh, really? Okay, so
I like to taste the actual vegetables of the food.
Exactly.
And when you do it nicely like this, the taste just comes out.
Right. Okay, let's go.
That is good.
Yeah. Let's see. Yummy. I love the colors. Like you say, the colors are just what makes this so attractive.
You've got the red from the pepper, the white from the onion.
Yeah. It could be an Italian dish.
It could.
Isn't the Italian flag red, white, and green?
And it'd be a terrific side for something like pasta or something like that. I feel like this would just make
absolutely.
It look so good.
Yeah, it absolutely would. You ready?
Oh,
should we try this?
I can't wait.
Okay, let's. Okay, we have the armor to do it with. Here we go.
Oh, this looks good. Mmm.
Mmm. It doesn't want to go in. Mm-mm.
Now this is good because it's very, you taste the simple tastes of the vegetables.
Mmm.
But it's very tasty.
And a little bit more cooked actually would really make it yum. Mmm. Well, I'm glad you like that.
It's already pretty yum.
It is pretty yum. Now we're going to watch this video together.
You are what you eat. How many times have you heard that before? There might be more truth to that old saying than you think. Numerous research studies are showing that food choices we make every day have an important impact on our colon cancer risk. I'm Mary Eve Brown, a dietitian at the Kimmel Cancer Center at Johns Hopkins. Choosing a healthy lifestyle that includes eating the right foods and getting plenty of exercise go a long way in keeping your colon healthy. The American Cancer Society, American Institute for Cancer Research, and the World Cancer Research Fund all recommend the following. Watch your weight. Be as lean as possible within your normal body weight range. Get physical. 30 minutes of physical activity a day is a minimum suggestion. Limit your intake of fast foods and watch what you drink. Try to avoid sugar-filled beverages. Try to eat 21 ounces of non-starchy vegetables and fruits a day. Eat unprocessed grains and limit refined starches. Processed meats are high-risk foods. Limit your red meat consumption to just 11 ounces a week. Don't smoke and limit alcohol drinks to one per day for women and two for men. And don't pick up the salt shaker. When you go to the grocery store, head for the produce and seafood sections. The vitamins, minerals, and antioxidants needed to lower your risk of colon cancer are all there for the eating. It's important to remember, all the research linking a healthy diet to a healthy colon doesn't mean much unless you put it to work. If you are a colon cancer patient, there are ways to manage side effects of treatment through diet. If you've had colon cancer surgery, it might be helpful to stay away from high-fiber foods like popcorn, nuts, raw fruits, and vegetables. If you're experiencing nausea from treatment, try eating and drinking slowly and have your meals at room temperature. Patients should not lie down for 2 hours after a meal. Chemotherapy and radiation can cause fluid and electrolyte losses. All fluids count as long as they don't contain alcohol or caffeine. Colorectal cancer patients should try to eat several small meals a day. Pack them with plenty of protein and calories. Diet and how it affects colon health and colon cancer, they go hand in hand.
Dr. Genovese, what are the signs and symptoms that people should look for if they are concerned about colorectal cancer?
There are several signs. The most common one is erectile bleeding unexplained, okay? Any change in bowel habits, either away from the normal towards diarrhea or towards constipation. Either of these sometimes can be an indicator of colon cancer. Abdominal pain, particularly lower abdominal pain. Any kind of rectal or anal pain also is a reason for concern and would be a reason to want to be examined by a physician.
And what now, colorectal cancer is one of the few cancers that we can actually screen for. There are many that we don't have a screening test. We don't get those early warning signs. But this is one that we can screen for. Now, are there different types of screening tests available?
There are. Primarily what's been used in the past is tests that look for blood in the stool and then a variety of tests that image the colon, in other words, give you a picture of the colon.
So if we're looking for blood in the stool, that would simply be a stool analysis that you just do at home, you drop it into the laboratory.
Exactly.
Tell us about the different imaging tests that there are.
Basically, traditionally, there had been a test called barium enema, which is an X-ray test where barium is infused through the rectum and makes an outline of the colon, so you can take X-ray images of the colon. This has been largely replaced by something called CT colography, which is a CT scan, which many have heard of, but it is imaged in a certain way that allows us to actually get a picture inside the colon.
Does it require contrast like the barium enema used to?
It does require air, and it does require preparation, but doesn't require the contrast that the barium enema did.
Right. So a little bit less invasive.
A little less invasive, more tolerable.
Right. Okay. And then the gold standard for screening?
The gold standard for screening at this point is colonoscopy, which is a video camera examination of the colon done under sedation.
So that's even more tolerable because you're sedated.
Exactly, exactly.
And how many of those did you do today?
I did 13 today.
Well, congratulations. What's your record?
14 is the record.
Wow, so you worked a hard day today.
I did.
And screening colonoscopies, how often are they done? For someone who has no particular risk factors with family or anything, what would be a typical...
The typical range is usually around 10 years, provided there are no symptoms.
All right. So starting at 50, so 50, 60, 70 and on.
Yes.
All right. Well, that's doable, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And do people they feel anything, or is the sedation deep enough that they don't remember?
Many patients tell me they don't believe the exam has been done. So it is painless.
Right. Great. Now, at colonoscopy, if you see a polyp, what do you actually do to that polyp?
If we see a polyp, actually, we try to remove it in its entirety, and that actually allows us to find out what it is and also allows us to prevent colon cancer.
So let's say you remove a polyp, you send it to the pathologist, comes back being positive for cancer. What is the next step for that patient?
The next step for that patient generally involves consultation with a surgeon, because if at all possible, we would like to remove the area of the colon where this polyp is or was. Usually some other imaging tests are done to determine whether there's any sign of this anywhere outside the colon. But most of the information we glean is done at the time of a surgical exploration.
Mm. So when you say outside of the colon, you'd be looking at the liver?
The liver, the lymph nodes, the lungs.
Okay, so those are places that colon cancer could spread to.
Yes.
And if at the time of surgery, what would be removed typically?
Typically what would be removed would be just the segment of the colon with a margin on both sides of where the tumor was. And generally those two ends are hooked back together and allows the patient to function very normally afterwards.
All right. Now, what if the tumor is very low in the bowel? What sort of surgery would be involved then?
Generally, if it's very, very low, sometimes what's called an anterior-posterior resection is necessary, where most of the rectum is removed And in those situations, sometimes a colostomy is necessary, a colostomy being a separate opening of the intestine into the abdominal wall.
And that would be a permanent prosthesis, I guess you might call it, that that person would have for the rest of their life.
That's true, yes.
And then they attach a bag each day.
Yes.
That's
yes.
how they would evacuate. The let's say the surgery didn't require that and the anastomosis was reformed. What sort of follow-up do those patients have?
Generally, they're going to be examined within a year with colonoscopy, and then every 3 to 5 years after that, depending on findings, depending on whether new polyps are found.
And those people, I'm sure, are very glad to have colonoscopies.
Absolutely.
Unlike the rest of us, don't look forward to them. Coming up next, Sean is ready to show us some exercise moves. But first, let's take a look at today's medical news report. In the headlines today, kids' kidneys at risk from non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, colorectal cancer risk with obesity, and a very heavy Gallup poll. An Indiana study has found that exposure to non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs is a common cause of acute kidney injury in children and teens. The most common non-steroidal agents used in the identified cases were ibuprofen, naproxen, and ketorolac, and most patients had received doses within the recommended limits. Children younger than 5 fared worse and were more likely to require temporary dialysis and admission to the intensive care unit. None of the children required ongoing dialysis, but only 70% had normal renal function at follow-up laboratory testing. So parents, take care of which anti-inflammatory agent you choose for your children, especially if they're under 5. Mounting evidence indicates that obesity may be associated with an increased risk of colorectal cancer. The results of 54 studies involving 9 million individuals were pooled and analyzed by a research group in China. Those with a BMI over 30 had a 33% greater risk for colorectal cancer. Those with central obesity, by waist measurement, had a 45% increased risk. So fight the obesity epidemic, especially if you have a family history of colorectal cancer or polyps. A new Gallup poll revealed that just over 36% of Americans are overweight and 26% are classified as obese. More than 350,000 adults participated in the survey, volunteering their weights and heights. Body mass index is calculated using weight and height and is a reflection of body fat. A normal BMI is between 20 and 25, overweight between 25 and 30, and obesity is 30 and above. With over 60% of the population now overweight or obese, those who maintain a healthy weight are outnumbered almost 2 to 1. So calculate your BMI and take active steps to keep it in the normal range. I'm Dr. Nerida McKibben, and that's today's medical news report.
A movement toward daily scripture reading is underway. It's called Revived by His Word. The plan? To read one chapter of the Bible per day. The goal? To direct the attention of participants to the importance of knowing Jesus through His Word.
Welcome back. Sean, what have you got for us? I like these chairs. This looks like we're going to have a really cruisy exercise session today.
Absolutely. We could just actually sit and lounge.
We could talk about exercise.
We could talk about exercise, but not today.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
All right. You're so mean.
So let's do a nice wide base. All right. What you want to do is
Nice wide base, take a deep breath. All right, put the hands out. And we're gonna, since we're gonna work some chest exercises today, we're gonna open and close the chest, all right? What you're doing here is not trying to overexert the muscle, just warm it and prepare it for exercise. Opening the chest up.
Okay.
And then stretching out the scapular area, the back, all right? 3, 2, and 1, okay? Let's do a little, some butt kicks, okay? Just
all
to
right.
get the body, the blood flowing a little bit. 3, 2, and 1, go. You just wanna be light on your feet. If you have to, if you can't handle the impact, okay, just here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm gonna keep on going.
All right.
You can do this for about 30 seconds. After about 10, 15 seconds, actually, you start to feel the body warm up, okay? I'm gonna go 5, 4, 3, 2, and 1, okay?
All right.
So we got these nice cushiony chairs.
Yeah.
We're not gonna sit in them, okay? But we're gonna pretend.
Okay.
But we're gonna work the triceps, okay?
All right.
We're gonna keep the legs about shoulder width apart, parallel, and toes pointing forward.
All right.
The back of your
sit-upon
pants. Yes. You call it a sit-upon?
Yes, a sit-upon.
We're gonna go all the way down, let it graze against the chair, and back up, okay? When you get to the top, squeeze your tricep, all right? Let's go for 6, 3, 2, and 1, go. 1. Now, don't do these too fast. 3, 4, 5, I want you to hold it on 6. And squeeze here, okay? The back of the arm is working the entire time, okay?
Mm-hmm.
One more time. All the way down, stretch, 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 and back up, okay? This is working the back of the triceps. Some people call it the hello goodbyes. You know when you're waving and
yes.
how do I get rid of these?
That's why the queen does it this way.
Yes.
Didn't you know?
Yeah. All right, so we're going to turn around, excuse
right.
my back, right? But we're going to go here,
mm-hmm.
and we're going to still work the core, but we're going to work the chest a little bit. We're going to put the right leg up for 2 reps, and then the left leg up for 2 reps,
all
okay?
Right.
3, 2, put the right leg up, and then go. 1, 2, switch, go. 1, 2, switch, go. 1, 2, last set, switch, go. 1, and 2, okay? We're picking up that leg so that we can involve a little bit, some glutes, okay?
Mm-hmm.
A good way to maximize one exercise and add another one into it. Compound
exercise.
Also makes
you work your core, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Because you're not symmetrical.
There
yeah.
you go, okay?
Yeah.
So what we're gonna do next is some in and out, some core workout, exercise. We're gonna sit on the edge of the chair, okay? You could use a bench, but we got a nice chair.
We have.
Yeah. So, legs are gonna be up here. You're gonna sit back a bit, extend it all the way out, and then in, okay? Okay, all the way out. Okay. So, in this position here, your legs are working.
Mm-hmm.
Back in. Squeeze, try and bring your leg all the way in towards your chest. Back out. Let's do 3, go. 1, 2, and 3, okay? Great exercise to challenge the core, okay?
I love doing that when I'm watching TV.
Really?
Yeah, not the whole time.
You need to watch some more interesting TV.
Do I?
Yeah, if you can exercise and do that, you need to change the station.
Well, it's not Hope Channel then.
You know, when I'm watching TV, I'm not thinking about any exercise.
Aren't you? Oh,
you
that's because you do it all day.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Yeah.
I'm like, I just want to sit and veg out a little bit.
All right.
All right, let's stretch it out. Okay. Now, cool down is what? We want to relax.
Yep.
Right? So I like here, stretching it out here.
Yeah, because we use those muscles.
We do. Triceps are nice and engaged. But what I do want you to do, pay attention to this, is don't make this shoulder go all the way up. Relax it down, okay? You don't want it to be up here.
Mm.
You want it to just relax, okay? Touch the sides. Now what you could do is take this hand here, these fingers, and reach across the body. You will feel your triceps engage a little bit.
Mm.
Just flex it a little bit.
Feel it.
Admire your hard work.
Aww.
There you go.
Good muscle.
You can pet your tricep. There you go. Pet your tricep, you know? Good tricep.
Sounds like you're petting your dinosaur, your tricep.
Yeah. Shake it out. Now, we started with this, right? And you can finish
with
this. Okay. Open and close. Feel good?
Very good. Yeah.
Now, you can repeat this for a couple times, three times. You know, you either do it for time or you do it for reps.
Great. Well, thanks, Sean. That was great workout.
Very welcome.
And now let's watch an A-plus advantage. And while you sit there, do your scrunches.
Are you considering learning a new sport? It could be a huge advantage. Recent research found that men who improved their physical fitness reduced their chance of death by 44%. Middle-aged and older men who began a moderately vigorous sports activity like cycling, soccer, basketball, or hiking lived longer. They also have lower rates of death from heart disease. It is time to get off the bench. Taking up a new sport is another ageless advantage.
Welcome back. If you missed a previous episode or you want to download one of our recipes, then visit us at our website, hopetv.org/gohealthy. We're also on iTunes. Just look for our video podcast there. Now, do you have a question about colon cancer? If so, then call us 855-400-HEALTHY. That's 855-400-4325. I want to thank you for posting your comments and your questions on our Facebook page. And here are some questions that we have not had a chance to answer yet on our previous shows. Mike posted on Facebook, first time watching Go Healthy for Good, and it already caught my attention. I feel blessed. God bless you. Thanks, Mike. Sylvia from New York called and said, I've been diagnosed with Parkinson's disease, and I also have mercury fillings. Should I remove them? Well, Sylvia, this is a really important question for you. And I would say you should probably consider doing that if you can afford it, because it is quite costly. And what I would recommend is you first go and talk to a biological dentist. So find one in your area. They will be able to look at this issue for you and tell you whether it's a good idea or not. They can also give you a quote as to how much it costs and an idea of what the whole program will involve. So be sure to have it done well if you do decide to go ahead and have that done, because otherwise you'll have all that mercury going down your throat or the vapors coming into your nostrils, and that will put you even worse off in terms of mercury toxicity. You can also have your mercury levels checked to see whether it's even worth embarking on that program. So great question. Beverly from Georgia called and asked, in regards to the GM program, in other programs you said soy was good for your health. How come it's on the not good table now? Please explain. Well, Beverly, it's still on the good table. And what I would say is, if you have your soy labeled organic, then it is not genetically modified. If it's not labeled organic, it's genetically modified. And that I would put on the not good table. So be sure you watch your ingredients list and be actively getting soy that's non-GMO or organic. And finally, I had a caller. I'm 50 years old and feel a sting on my nails close to the bone. Is that a sign of arthritis? Usually arthritis would be felt right in the joint itself rather than on the nail bed. So probably it's not, and you might need to think about whether you've got some kind of neuropathy going on, some nerve problem. I want to thank you for sending your questions. Keep them coming. Don't forget to call us with your question about colon cancer. We're on 855-400-HEALTHY. That's 855-400-4325. Now, before I go back to my guest, take a look at this clip we've prepared for you. Bon appetit. Kale is a form of cabbage. It belongs to the brassica family, which includes broccoli, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts, and collard greens. Kale comes as green or purple leaves, does not tend to form a head. It's loaded with antioxidants.
beta carotene, vitamin K, vitamin C, and then lutein and zeaxanthines. It also, like the other brassicas, contains a chemical called sulforaphane. This is an anti-cancer chemical. Boiling it will reduce the levels. Steaming or stir-frying retains it. And then there's another anti-cancer compound called indole-3-carbinol, which is also found in kale. Dehydrated or baked, kale takes on the consistency of potato chips. It's a much healthier alternative though. Bon appetit. Dr. Genovese, we've just been talking about colon cancer surgery and we've talked about the patient, but what about that specimen? That bowel cancer is removed, it's sent to the pathologist. What things are they looking for that will tell us the future prognosis, etc.?
Well, basically two things. One, they want to know the depth of what's called invasion, how far the tumor is spread into the wall and perhaps outside the wall. This staging allows us to know whether the surgery alone is curative or whether other treatments are necessary. The other thing that they do now, which is something new, is many of these tumors can be tested for genetics. In other words, they can determine by examining the tumor whether or not there was a gene abnormality responsible. In other words, whether this might be something inherited that caused this tumor. That's important because it may affect how other family members are screened. So this is an additional thing which is fairly new that the pathologists look at as well.
That's very valuable information. Now, if that is positive, does that family get referred for genetics counseling, or how is that information?
Yes, they do. Generally, there's genetic counseling that is more and more available now. Used to be precluded by expense. Now some insurance carriers are even paying for it, so it's been a change, and it is something that's valuable in terms of, again, making sure we can prevent every case of colon cancer possible.
Absolutely. I would have thought that's a fundamental step for prevention for the next generation. It's a little bit short-sighted to not fund that.
Absolutely.
Although I guess if the insurance company is not funding the next generation, but we won't go there.
Right.
Now, you mentioned about depth of invasion and spread. Mm-hmm. What would be the next step if it was a relatively shallow cancer that had not spread? Would there need to be further treatment, or is surgery going to be sufficient?
It's a very close call. It is something the pathologist is able to stage very carefully. Again, there's a certain amount of invasion, which is okay. More than that does require other treatment. Primarily what we're concerned about is there is lymph glands that drain the entire colon, and these lymph glands can be a very common place where the tumor can spread to. Once it's there, it does need other treatment. So that's why it's very important to know that information.
So it's like cancer cells, they swim upstream to the next, and I think of lymph nodes as like a railway system and mm-hmm. from station to station to station,
exactly.
So depending how far they've gone. So the next step, if further treatment was necessary, what would that be?
Generally, you're going to be referred to an oncologist, a cancer specialist, and most of the treatments are what are called chemotherapy, usually a combination of oral medications and medicines that are infused over a period of time. Depending on the tumor type, usually the general range is usually about a year or so of treatment afterwards.
Wow, that's quite substantial.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I'm thinking is the earlier the detection, the better.
That's absolutely true.
Now, what's the prognosis for an early stage cancer? You know, I know in oncology we talk about 5-year survival rates.
Mm-hmm.
What if we use that terminology, what is our prognosis?
It's very good. If caught early, it's a 90% 5-year prognosis, 5-year survival. So my sense is 90% of these patients are going to be cured.
So we're not just talking 5 years, we're talking
for good.
The rest of
the
life.
Most of us feel that if you've lasted with colon cancer as opposed to some other types of cancer, if you can get through 5 years without any signs of the tumor, you're cured.
Wow. So that tells me then that screening is really important to detect these early. So let's run over the screening guidelines.
Okay. For average risk patients in this country, the screening is recommended to begin at age 50. If you're African American, the screening should start at age 45 and then should be every 10 years in the absence of any findings.
And if you're not average risk, if there's been a offspring, sibling, parent with colorectal cancer, then what age group should you start?
We should again start at age 40 or 5 years younger than the youngest affected member. The other thing that's different is those patients are screened every 5 years as opposed to every 10 years.
All right, very good. Friends, remember to call us with your question about colon cancer. The number's 855-400-HEALTHY. That's 855-400-4325. Go Healthy for Good. We'll be back after a short break. Stay there.
Fortress and my deliverer. My God is my rock, in whom I take refuge. He is my shield and the horn of my salvation, my stronghold.
Welcome back to Go Healthy for Good. We're taking more of your health questions, especially the ones related to colon cancer. The number is 855-400-HEALTHY. That's 855-400-4325. Now, take a look at this next video.
My name is Evelise Page, and I am a stage 4 colon cancer survivor. I knew that family history put me at a higher risk of developing colon cancer at a young age, and so I was diligent about getting regular colonoscopies, eating organic food, and exercising. Despite this, I developed colon cancer more than a year before I was due for my next colonoscopy. It was almost eerie as I was diagnosed at the very same age with the very same type of cancer that my father had died from when I was a little girl. I learned many things as I battled cancer, but three key things stand out in my mind. First, I realized the importance of being my own advocate for my health. I had to listen to the wisdom of my doctors, but I also had to listen to my body enough to know what was normal for me and what I would be able to handle. Second, I came to see the importance of having a team of doctors, both conventional and natural, who work together to heal the whole person. And third, I had to keep reminding myself that cancer is not my identity and I am not a statistic. Statistics are good, in my opinion, to help us make the right decisions about treatment, but not for our outcome. On paper, my odds for survival were less than 8%. Yet here I am, 2 years later, cancer-free. You can't let those statistics get you down. You have to focus on healing and believing that we serve a great God that can do the impossible.
Dr. Genovese, we're talking about colon cancer. How might somebody think about, let's say they've had someone in their family and they really are very focused on reducing their risk, or maybe they're just normal and they really don't want to have a cancer, which is the boat I sit in. How might I go about really reducing my risk, being really active about the choices I make every day? Tell us, are there any medications? We'll start with medications. Any medications that sort of might reduce risk?
We know that aspirin and other arthritis-like medications called nonsteroidals can reduce polyp formation and therefore reduce colon cancer risk. So these are things that people take for other reasons, which may actually be protective for colon cancer as well.
Interesting. That makes me think that maybe polyps might progress by a process of inflammation, but, you know, we don't really know why they come.
No, that's true. We don't know exactly why, but again, there is some, the anti-inflammatory properties of these medications seem to preclude polyp growth.
Ah,
protective. That's great. Now, I think about what other lifestyle choices people might make. For example, what about physical activity?
Well, physical activity is important. It can reduce your risk by about 27%. So that's important. And
that's significant, because if the lifetime risk is 5% and we can reduce it that much, that takes us down.
Takes us down quite a bit, yes.
Yeah. Are there any foods that we should think about eating that would be good for us to prevent, be protective for colds?
Basically fiber, okay? Grains are important, fruits and vegetables. All these compounds are metabolized by the small bowel and actually produce protective compounds that actually protect against colon cancer.
That's really important. So the whole grain cereals, the fruits, the vegetables, and so the, and I guess legumes are very high in fiber too.
Absolutely.
So all of those things are going to give us a real benefit. Any foods particularly that we want to avoid?
Red meat, fatty food. Those are the main things.
All right, red meat. And I guess I think I'm right. The char grilled meats, like the barbecued meat where it's charred on the outside, that's really bad, isn't it?
It can be really bad. And it's very important if you're going to have the grilled things to actually have vegetables along with them.
Good point. So if you're going to put it on the barbecue, take it off early and, yeah, and put all the vegetables on with it.
Right.
I like that. Any other foods? The processed meats, you said.
Yes.
The red meat, the processed meat, that was about it?
Yeah, but any animal fat. So in other words, if you can avoid animal meat, that's really is helpful.
Okay. And any supplements, any vitamins or minerals or different things that we really need to be sure that we don't run low on?
Well, the most common one is calcium, which we need for so many other reasons anyway. So here's another reason. Calcium is very important.
Right.
Vitamin D is important.
Yeah, there's been some new research come out about the protective effect of vitamin D, that those people who have low vitamin D are much more at risk of particularly colon cancer. I'm not sure that we know why. Do we know why?
No, we don't know why at this point, no.
Okay. And anything else? So vitamin D, the calcium, and anything?
Magnesium.
Magnesium.
That's important.
So that's another bone one that goes along with calcium.
Yes.
Great. Well, that's been really helpful. Thank you so much for being on the show today.
You're certainly welcome.
While 1 in 20 Americans will receive the diagnosis of colorectal cancer during their lifetime, you don't have to be that one. Take action now to reduce your risk. Eat plenty of whole grain cereals, fruits, and veggies. Be sure to get sufficient vitamin B6, calcium, magnesium, and vitamin D. Avoid processed meat and red meat as much as possible. And if you choose to eat meat, be sure to avoid charring the surface. And then, be sure to have regular screening once you reach 45 or 50, depending on your risk factors. Thanks for joining us on Go Healthy for Good. We'll see you next time.